Hey there, just a quick heads up that today's episode is all about Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey. And I know that this story is nearly 3,000 years old, but we're going to be talking about a lot of things that make this particular movie unique. So if you haven't seen it yet, consider this a spoiler warning. So Sam, Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey has been out for a little while now, and I wonder if you're comfortable declaring a winner in this round of the culture war.
I don't think there's any way to look at this and not see Christopher Nolan as a hands-down winner in this one.
Sam Adams is a senior writer and editor and a film critic here at Slate.
It feels weirdly like he's returned us to the era of monoculture again. I'm getting texts from like family members who never talked to me about movies. People are literally stopping me on the street to ask if they need to see this in 70 millimeter IMAX. Like, it is just the level and the depth of cultural involvement is something we really almost never see anymore.
I am all in on the Nolan hype train. I mean, Memento, Inception, Batman. We don't have to talk about Interstellar, but a huge part of the reason I was so psyched to talk to Sam is because it gave me an official excuse to see this blockbuster during the workday. I went to a 2 p.m. showing on a Thursday afternoon, nearly 2 weeks after opening weekend, and the theater was sold out.
He's almost certainly going to make over $1 billion on his version of a 3,000-year-old story. The movie hasn't even opened in China yet, which is going to make it another boatload of money. And it is driving conversation all over the place. Not all of that conversation is great. That comes with the territory.
You know, as a daily news producer, I'm maybe not as steeped in like pop culture as much as I'd like to be. Like, I saw on the periphery that there was this conflict happening, mostly between like people in Elon Musk's ex and elsewhere. But like, how would you articulate what people were actually pissed off about here?
So much of this apparent culture war is being driven by and only seen on X. And there's one thing we know about Elon Musk. First of all, like, two things. One, he hates The Odyssey, or he hates Christopher Nolan's version of The Odyssey. He hates the idea of it. He hates the idea of it being kind of culturally diverse and not quote unquote historically accurate. And we also know that he is more than willing to put his finger on the scale as far as X's algorithm goes. So the fact that you were seeing all this stuff platformed on X and makes it seem like, oh my God, everybody is like mad at this movie. There's some people, at least we could say, who took issue with the fact that, you know, for example, he made, you know, Helen of Troy black, cast Lupita Nyong'o in that role, that, there weren't, as if this is something that anybody normally cares about, there weren't enough Greek actors in it. He used this sort of multiracial cast, which didn't reflect, you know, the makeup of ancient Greece at the time, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, you see people saying like, oh, wow, they know they're in trouble. They know this movie's going to tank. You could tell they're worried about it. They're running scared. Clearly they weren't. Clearly they were wrong. This movie is like a bigger hit than anybody predicted. It's just like a massive smash around the world. So the idea that those people, they're very loud, but the idea that they represent a significant faction or that they're apparent boycott of the film was going to make any noticeable dent has obviously turned out to be completely untrue.
So, I mean, this was a runaway success, but that kind of makes me think like this whole battle that was waged before and during the opening, it almost makes it seem like it was artificial. Like, was this a Pyrrhic victory if we're getting like Greek old school here? Like, what do you think we learned here? Did we learn anything?
We're probably still learning things. I mean, the discourse has not cooled down. I mean, it's still the biggest movie in the world, at least, I guess, Spider-Man's open now. So give it a few more hours. Right. But I mean, it's interesting because we have now sort of entered a different kind of culture war coming, if not from the left precisely, at least from a sort of more like academic intellectual perspective, where there are people, you know, who are now like, oh, this is not a faithful adaptation of The Odyssey. This is, you know, trivializing Homer's greatness. But, you know, it's this weird, almost like being in a time machine. I feel like I'm back in like, you know, the 90s or something, where people are just like, I feel like some of these people are kind of trying to like tell me that they don't even own a TV. Like, there's just this sort of like kind of high culture disdain for the idea of like big blockbuster movies across the board, which is sort of almost like thrilling in a way to see it come back, because it's just like, oh, we haven't had this argument in a long time. This is fun.
Today on the show, how The Odyssey conquered the box office and a cultural backlash. I'm Rob Gunther, sitting in for Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around. Three years ago, Christopher Nolan won Best Picture for Oppenheimer. At the time, do you remember any sort of like woke fighting happening around the release or reception of that movie?
I mean, yes, Oppenheimer definitely got it from all conceivable sides. One of the major complaints was that the movie didn't show the suffering of the Japanese people that were incinerated by the weapon that Oppenheimer created. You have his vision of it, but you never actually see anything like from their perspective. You never see Hiroshima or Nagasaki. And you had, you know, the sort of criticisms that dog every one of his movies, some of which are quite valid. I mean, the fact that he's like not super great at writing female roles, certainly not as interested in women as he is in men. I think that's just like mathematically accurate. And, you know, just, you know, the idea that he kind of turns everything into spectacle, that he makes everything into a Christopher Nolan movie. There's always going to be a scrambled timeline. There's always going to be a husband with a troubled relationship with either his wife or his daughter who's trying to get back to them.
The same people going after The Odyssey, were they already sort of like warmed up from having gone after his previous movies?
I mean, one thing that's been interesting watching Nolan's career over the last 20 years or something is that when he was the guy who did the Batman movies, the conventional wisdom was that he was a conservative, certainly from a British perspective, a Tory. You know, that he was making these kind of, you know, low-key pro-fascist, anti-Occupy Wall Street, you know, movies about vigilante justice. And, you know, he was a, you know, sort of a little, you know, home-focused guy who was just all about, like, white men and their nuclear families and protecting that. And so he took it a lot from kind of the left at that point in his career. He was a, you know, a sort of small-C conservative at the very least. And now, you know, because he's no longer making movies about Batman, I guess, and he's, you know, taken a pretty, you know, pronounced anti-war stance, certainly in his last couple of movies. He is now, and he's just become like a much bigger cultural object. Like, he was a blockbuster filmmaker before.
Yeah.
Now he is a Oscar-winning blockbuster filmmaker. He is, you know, the biggest target there is. And I think part of what, when we talk about the sort of right-wing crusade, the Elon Musk crusade against him failing, if the goal was to depress the movie's box office, that clearly didn't work. If the goal was for these sort of influencer grifters to boost their own profiles and, you know, get in Elon Musk's good graces and get the kind of, you know, numbers on Twitter that they can monetize, maybe they succeeded in that.
So after Oppenheimer, after the success of Oppenheimer, he had his pick to do pretty much anything he wanted. What do we know about how he chose The Odyssey?
I mean, he says that it's a story he had always been interested in telling. And this is clearly like, I mean, you had the biggest chips you could possibly have. He took a $100 million movie and made $1 billion, move it, won all the Oscars. You know, I think this is a story that he had wanted to tell for a long time. As he tells it, it's kind of, he's referred to it as like the Urtext. It is one of the foundations of Western literature. You can read, you know, romance, adventure, morality plays, all sorts of descendants of it back into Homer. You can look at all these things as kind of offshoots of what he's doing. But also, having seen in the movie, it really, he actually had a very specific purpose, which he wasn't talking about beforehand, because it's weirdly, when you're talking about a 3,000-year-old story, it is possible to spoil the Odyssey in some ways. So I will tread lightly on this. But he has made this essentially a movie about the betrayal of social and Western ideals. And if people like Elon Musk are claiming this as, you know, the foundational text of Western civilization, by which he means white Western, you know, white civilization, this is where all our values and our heritage comes from. Christopher Nolan is kind of agreeing with him, But he's also made a movie about how we have betrayed those ideals. He, you know, he focuses his movie very much on what the movie calls Zeus's Law, what, you know, Homer scholars call Xenia, which is kind of the Greek code of hospitality, which goes way beyond sort of welcoming someone into your home and is about sort of being kind to strangers.
Yeah, it's the golden rule that like every major religion and philosophy seems to adhere to, right?
Yes. Yeah. And that, and he's basically, you know, built this movie around the idea that a society that does not embrace strangers, that does not treat, you know, people who are not a part of it well, cannot sustain itself and, in fact, will crumble into ruin as ancient Greece did.
Yeah, what I found subversive about this interpretation of the golden rule, like we kind of think of it in the Judeo-Christian version of like treat others as you would want to be treated, right? Zeus's law is more like, don't pick on the homeless guy because he might be a god in disguise and will smite you. So there's a real saying to me that this law that undergirds our society is not just because it's the right thing to do, but because if we don't do it, like shit's going to get bad.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it applies in many circumstances in this movie. And what turns out to be sort of surprisingly, there is an Oppenheimer like moment in this movie, which is, you know, the Nolan sort of views the Trojan horse, which the Odyssey and the other versions of the story, because the Trojan horse isn't really very important in the Odyssey itself. But, you know, Odysseus is the one who kind of came up with the idea, who designed it. And this is part of what the Odyssey characterizes as his most important quality, which is his kind of craftiness. He is a sort of wily, intelligent man, able to trick people. And then the movie says like, well, yeah, that worked out great for the Siege of Troy specifically, but it kind of like, you know, as the last line of Oppenheimer says, like kind of blew up the world in a way, like it just, you know, destroyed the idea that like there is, you know, kind of that there are rules, right? That you like, even in war, in the bloodiest of combat, you will sort of abide by certain principles that you can, you know, trust people to act in a sort of quote unquote civilized manner. And once you've done away with that, everything's on the table.
You know, you're talking about the horse as this atom bomb, right, of this movie. And the movie opens up with this scene of Elliot Page, who I had not realized was in the movie. I know Elliot Page has been a longtime Christopher Nolan collaborator in many movies. And right away, I was like, oh, this is, to me, it was like, this is why people are pissed on the right wing, because they don't want trans people to be like in society. And then, of course, there was the previous controversy, Lupita Nyong'o playing central characters that have not often been cast as anything other than white actresses. I mean, for me, like before you even get into the ideological disagreements about what the movie could mean, we just had on its face like identity politics. Like, we don't want to see these people in our zone.
Right. And that's just sort of, I'm conflicted about how much to even treat that as a good faith objection, because it's just so nakedly racist
totally.
And transphobic. And the idea that it has anything to do with historical accuracy or, you know, was Helen actually black? Well, I mean, actually, according to the story, she hatched from an egg. so like, I mean, you know, probably none of these people existed. I mean, there was Troy, there probably was a war. Was it actually fought over a woman being running off for the wrong guy? Probably not. That's not usually what wars are fought over. The movie certainly suggests otherwise, that was essentially a ruse to have a war over trade routes, which is the kind of thing that wars are more often fought over. I mean, that objection is just obviously bigoted on its face. And I think that's how it should be regarded. But as far as like why Nolan made that choice, I mean, I think the movie is, for better or worse, I think essentially race blind when it comes to casting. I mean, he's working with actors that he's worked with before, like Himesh Patel, who's incredibly great as Eurylochus. It is his second in command. And, you know, I think because again, he is making a point and telling the story about contemporary society and not about ancient Greece, you know, all these questions about like, oh, are those the right kinds of armor, is that the kind of sword that someone would have wielded at the time, are really not relevant to the story. He is telling, you know, a myth about myth.
After the break,
just how seriously do we have to take Elon Musk and his movie meltdowns?
I want to go back to the right-wing backlash for a bit. Sure. Elon Musk, he had this incredible flame out leading up to the film, and he promised to sort of correct the record by introducing his own version of the film. What do we know about that?
It's been very funny. I mean, I wonder sometimes if how much I should be amused by the fact that the richest and one of the most powerful men in the world is like clearly an utter lunatic. That seems actually not that funny. But he's just so transparent in some ways. I mean, he ginned up this whole right-wing backlash, you know, platform to amplify these people who are saying this movie is going to be a big failure, would often sort of jump in with his little, you know, 100 emoji, which is usually his contribution to the discourse. That utterly failed. And I think that's a problem for him, both in terms of his agenda and in terms of the legitimacy of Twitter. Like, the success of this movie is just a giant advertisement for the idea that Twitter is not real life, that influence on Twitter is meaningless, that it does not affect anything. And that is both very bad for his brand, bad for his business. And, I think really gets under his skin in a pretty obvious way. And so he is so sort of wounded and just being such a big crybaby about this that he has now come out on Twitter and said, okay, I'm going to give $100 million, you know, to make a historically accurate version of this. Either I'm going to, and every day it's something different. So I'm going to pay a filmmaker to do it. I'm going to get Mel Gibson to do it. I'm going to have Grok, my AI, generative AI tool, make a historically accurate version of this, which is, I mean, you know, and this is all like Elon just says stuff, right? Like, this is going to happen around the same time as he establishes a colony on Mars.
Right.
But it's clear that it has gotten under his skin. And that is, the only consolation I can take in the fact that he wields so much power and is such a complete lunatic is the fact that he clearly, that this clearly does get to him. And I can kind of enjoy that from a distance. He's also, you know, pretty dangerous when he's crazy.
He's very dangerous because he has, you know, so much money. And I was going to say, like, you don't have to take him seriously. And I think the fruits of his labors are like comical, maybe not comical, but, you know, they're easy to dismiss in retrospect. But when he says something like, I'm going to spend $100 million to fuel an AI movie, and then you have a director like Neil Blomkamp who made District 9, he recently just came out with his own AI generated short movie. It's kind of like the position that he has and the power that he has is able to influence culture in such a broad way. Like, just yesterday, he also announced he's going to spend $100 million on supporting right-wing causes leading up to the midterm. So, you know, trivial as he is, or as insignificant as his actual followers are, he commands such an outsized role in our money, in our politics, and he's bought this soapbox that can amplify even his most strange thoughts.
$100 million is not a lot of money for a movie budget. That is Oppenheimer money, not Odyssey money. But it is a lot of money in the political arena. And that is, he is actually spending that and not just saying he's going to. And that that obviously does have a very tangible and, I think, pretty dangerous effect. So it is easy and, frankly, fun to laugh at how much he is, like, losing his mind over this movie being a huge success. But then, you know, there are parts of the non-culture war that he is much more effective at winning.
Yeah. I wonder if we, and I say we like in the media, gave too much oxygen to this in the lead up to the Odyssey, like, because it was such a blockbuster film, because the ticket sales speak to the success of the film, of Christopher Nolan. Like, what if we just didn't pay attention to Elon Musk? I mean, this wouldn't have been a story, right? It would have just been like, oh, everybody's excited for the Odyssey, and it did really well. What's next?
Yeah, I'm of two minds on that, because on the one hand, I think there is too much of, you know, what I think of as sort of like almost like magical thinking when it comes to, you know, people like Elon Musk. I mean, like, what Elon Musk thinks matters. I wish it didn't.
Right.
But he is the richest, most powerful man on the world. Like, what he thinks makes a huge difference. I do think the media gave way too much credence to the idea that they were sort of like a legitimate, significant, widespread you know, backlash to, you know, this movie before it even came out. I think, you know, pretty much all those articles were just written around posts on Twitter. So I do think the media was way too credulous about the idea that this was like a real significant phenomenon. Like, clearly there are people who didn't want the Odyssey to exist. I mean, there are people who are just straight up racists who were like, yeah, I don't think this story should have black people in it. I mean, that's not a surprise. But I don't think we need to care about that. I think we don't, certainly don't think we need to write articles about it.
You talked earlier about how Christopher Nolan is a lightning rod for both sides. And there was a much less dramatic controversy coming from the other side of the spectrum. We had classicist Emily Wilson a few years back. She made this like really novel translation of the Odyssey, which was in fact cited by Christopher Nolan in the lead up to this movie. And everybody kind of turned to her for a reaction to the movie after it came out. And she had something a little surprising to say. What was her deal?
I mean, she hates it. I don't think that is an exaggeration or a simplification. I mean, it's interesting to look at, go back and watch the sort of videos and the stuff she was making about the movie before she saw it, and they didn't show it to her particularly early. I mean, they had a screening for her and some other people from her publisher, but it was like a few days in advance or something. So she did a lot of interviews and being a pieces and stuff before she'd seen the film. It was like, hey, you know, he came at this good faith, and you know, adaptations are never faithful to the text, and you know, we're going to see what his vision of it is. And then she saw the film and clearly like is just hopping mad about it, and having put years of her life into scrupulously translating not just Homer's language but his intent, thinking incredibly hard about that. I think this, you know, movie is, I mean, it's not that. This is not Homer.
Right.
On screen. This is Christopher Nolan's Odyssey. It is not Homer's. So as a sort of classicist, as an expert on the Odyssey, it does not surprise me at all that she doesn't like what he's done with it. I don't think her reading of the film is very attentive to what the film itself is doing. You know, what works on screen and what doesn't. I think she just misreads some of the scenes entirely.
It's hard. Here's my thing, though. I kind of felt bad for her because I like it read to me as someone who was not a film person, who was a classicist, was basically like called on as an expert in this epic to weigh in, and came with, you know, like in your one of your writings about Emily Wilson, you said that praise is kind of like a double-edged sword, right? Like that's the most damning form of criticism, is the soft praise that she gives. Like she equates it to like eating a popsicle on a summer day or something like that. But at the same time, I felt like the backlash, maybe because people were so primed to defend this movie from right-wing trolls, I feel like she really got attacked, maybe only for like a day. She was like, you know, Twitter's main person of the day for a little bit. But I wonder if you feel like this as a critic, like do you ever come out with like a hot take that you didn't think would generate the sort of backlash that it does about a certain piece of art? And I don't know, how does that work when you're momentarily put on the spotlight?
I mean, I don't know that I've had a review go quite as viral as Emily Wilson's Odyssey review has gone. I mean, again, like my mom texted it to me last night and was like, this is very long. Do I need to read it? Like a friend sent it to me. And I was like, sure. So it is way out there. It is definitely kind of broken containment. If you're going to say critical things about other people's work, you should expect, at least be prepared to get that back.
And there's nothing shot, right?
unfair about that. I mean, you know, an interesting thing about Christopher Nolan is he obviously got, you know, he was a sort of esteemed, like interesting filmmaker. And then his footprint really got kind of supersized by the Batman trilogies.
Yeah.
And he has, I think, almost uniquely basically held on to that comic book type fandom while no longer making comic book movies. So, you know, I've seen people kind of expressing kind of Nolan-esque fandom for Emily Wilson. And basically just being like, you know, she's the expert. How dare anyone question her? You know,
this like, is what just are we fighting Nolan. About anymore?
This is just Nolan fanboys who can't take criticism of their hero. So it's, you know, and none of that is sort of particularly interesting discussion. Like, I think there's all sorts of room in the middle. This does not have to be like whatever, like Team Emily or Team Chris,
yeah.
Which I think is what has devolved into in a lot of places.
But this is good, right? I mean, like the fandoms, the social media wars, not the right wing stuff, but the fact that we're still talking about this movie, you know, however long, a week and a half, 2 weeks after its release. I saw it yesterday at 2:10 and it was sold out. Like I gave up my seat to a senior citizen couple that had to sit in different parts of the theater because I saw them walk in and split up. This is good for movies, right? Like blockbuster movies are good. Monoculture serves a purpose in some way now that it didn't used to. What are your closing thoughts for having seen The Odyssey come and go?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I to a certain extent celebrate anything that gets people into movie theaters and especially for movies that are genuinely worth talking about. I think this is bringing, you know, sort of, you know, adults and educating people about, you know, various kinds of projection and, you know, the experience of seeing movies in theaters.
Making people think about war.
That all seems really good to me. Yeah. Some of the discussion about it has been incredibly annoying,
yeah.
Which is also what happens when people who aren't used to talking about movies suddenly feel like they need to have an opinion about things. But that, you know, comes with the territory and the fact that this is so, everybody's a little out of practice, I think, in how to have this kind of discussion at this scale. But hopefully we are learn the lessons from it and take them with us into the future.
Yeah, we're getting warmed up for next time. We're getting warmed up for Christopher Nolan's next movie. Sam Adams, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Rob.
Sam Adams is a staff writer and a senior editor here at Slate. You can find all his coverage of The Odyssey on slate.com. And that's the show. What Next is produced by Evan Campbell, Madeline Temsusharm, and Patrick Ford. Paige Osborne is the senior supervising producer of What Next and What Next TBD. Mia Lobel is the executive producer of podcasts here at Slate. Ben Richman is the senior director of podcast operations. And I'm Rob Gunther, sitting in for Mary Harris. You can find me on Blue Sky. I'm at @OneRobGunther. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.